Did you know this? Apparently, there are more websites now in Chinese than in English. And the Chinese actress Yao Chen has more Twitter followers than Barack Obama or Oprah Winfrey. It's the Asian century, and according to the Australian Parents Council, if our children don't start learning an Asian language or studying Asian culture now, they'll be left behind in the future globalised workplace. One of the Rudd government's visions for education in 2020 was that at least 12% of Australian Year 12 students would study an Asian language. At the moment, we're not even close. Last year, just 6% of those sitting their HSC took an Asian language. Overwhelmingly, the vast majority had Asian backgrounds. They were native speakers. The Australian Parents Council, which represents independent school parents and the state schools organisations, are doing something about this. Today, together, they're launching a new project to educate parents about the benefits of Asian language studies. With me is Ian Dalton, Executive Director of the Australian Parents Council, and in our Melbourne studio is Tom Parker, a consultant for Beasley Intercultural. Welcome, both of you, to Life Matters.
Good morning, Richard.
Morning, Richard.
Ian, I'll start with you. A push for more Asian studies and languages in our school curriculum has been on the agenda for a while. I can remember doing interviews about this 3 years ago, at the very least. Why target parents, though, rather than principals?
Well, there are already a number of programs around that are targeting principals and teachers as part of the National Asian Languages and Studies in Schools program. And part of the thrust of the program is to lift student demand. And what we've been saying is that if you're going to interest and engage students in the studies of Asia and Asian languages, then you need to make it appealing to parents because they are the primary influence on student career choices. So at the demand level, it's a matter of stimulating parents, helping them to understand the advantages for their child. And I think in the here and now, a lot of the promotion of Asian languages in the past and Asian studies has been a little bit elitist, in my opinion, where it's targeted young people who wanted to go overseas, work as lawyers or cultural advisors, that sort of role. Whereas what we're saying is that if you are really going to increase student demand in the broad sense, then it needs to be made relevant to kids in the here and now.
How do you get past the problem that I alluded to when I was introducing you? That, you know, it's all about maximising your score when you leave school. And if you're not a native speaker, you're never going to be one of the top students, are you? I mean, you're up against people who've been hearing it since they were born. That is, you know, at some point, the parents and the students themselves, they're going to kind of arbitrage that and decide, actually, no, I'd rather do something I'm more likely to excel in.
Well, in fact, they're doing that now, and that's one of the problems with there's a lot of structural issues that are getting in the way of students being able to study languages, and that sort of revolves around the number of teachers, the number of Asian languages teachers are decreasing. But also, particularly in the year 11 and 12 now, it's no longer a requirement for students going to tertiary languages to have a secondary language. So, of course,
which I find astonishing, I have to say.
Yeah, and it makes it very difficult because, of course, if young people are trying to maximise their TER scores, they're going to say, oh, well, I'll drop languages and take it up again at university, whereas we know that in a lot of cases that's not happening.
You're hoping to recruit more than 200 parents from 75 schools around Australia. What exactly will you be teaching them, mentoring them about?
It'll all be around helping them to start to engage in informed conversations with the rest of their school communities, with their fellow parents, of course, with the students and also with the school leadership, because in a lot of cases with this issue, teachers and school principals are left to fight the battles and tackle the systemic issues on their own. And we know that that's not enough, that the parents have got a lot to offer in that we have quite a significant input into schooling policy and the structures that surround schooling. And so we believe that if we have an informed and engaged network of parents who can start having these conversations, that they can provide great support to their schools.
Now, the languages you're focusing on are Mandarin, Japanese, Korean and Indonesian. Why these four?
They're the four specific NALSP program target languages.
NALSP program?
That the National Asian Languages and Studies in Schools program. And at the moment, there's around about, or in 2008, which are the last figures, there are around about 6% of all Year 12 students studying in Asian languages. And as you said, one of those four languages. And as you said, a lot of them are native-born, and the target is to get that up, as you said earlier, to 12% by 2020.
And, of course, they're all different languages, and they're renowned for different levels of how difficult they are. Mandarin is regarded, if you're not a native speaker, as a very difficult language to learn, whereas Bahasa Indonesian is not regarded as so difficult.
That's right, it's closer to the English language. So, as I said, there's all sorts of structural issues and difficulties that we need to negotiate through this, but we believe that by having informed and engaged parents involved in the conversation, we can start to address some of those issues and break down some of the some of those perceptions around difficulties of languages.
On Life Matters today, we are talking about a new push to get, really to get, to recruit parents to get involved in getting young people studying Asian languages. It to me, this seems so obvious. We need to do it. We need to be a more Asian language speaking nation than we are now. With me is Ian Dalton, who's Executive Director of the Australian Parents Council. And I want to bring in Tom Parker, who's a consultant for Beasley in intercultural consulting. You are part of that, Tom. You're also a fluent Mandarin speaker. How did you come to study Chinese in the 80s when it was probably virtually unheard of?
It was a bit odd, I think, probably in the 80s to have the ability to study Chinese at a secondary school level. And for me, it was really probably a family decision. I an older sister had married a Singaporean Chinese, and whilst they lived over in Singapore, we had parts of his family here in Melbourne. And so I guess in the late 70s, instead of meat and three veg, we often had yum cha and Chinese New Year. And I guess for a young boy, whether it's, you know, red envelopes, firecrackers and dragons, it was something that that drew me in. And actually my mum at the time was also studying Mandarin at night school. And I think, again, we talk about the influence of parents through her, I guess, example, and then it being offered to me. It was something that that I took to and I was encouraged to do. And perhaps, unlike other applications of subjects or of languages, I could see an outlet within which I could use this specific language, if it all just to converse with my brother-in-law's great-grandmother.
Well, it seems an obvious question, but I'm going to ask it nonetheless. How has acquiring Mandarin helped you?
Enormously. I've been able to do things, see things, and I guess develop a professional life that has Chinese at the centre of it, that would not sort of enable me to do things. So, I mean, I worked for the ABC in Beijing, back also in Australia with Radio National through the Asia-Pacific program. I was John So's media advisor at the City of Melbourne for a number of years. And more recently, being out on my own, I worked with the AFL as a consultant in putting the first ever AFL exhibition game in Shanghai. So to be able to combine a number of different passions with the central theme of Chinese, it certainly has opened up doors and enabled me to contribute in a large way. And now I'm doing that with this particular program.
Not everybody is, of course. I mean, it would be great if more of us, and many more of us, and my children's generation, my kids are 11 and 8, if they could be learning Asian languages. But not everybody needs to. What would be helpful, I think, is if everybody was more aware of Asian cultures and the idea of Asian studies, which was a big subject when I was at school in the late 70s and early 80s, it's not the same anymore.
No, and I think also part of our discussion in the program that we're working towards is not necessarily just to focus on language acquisition. It's actually a bit broader than that, and it's that ability to have engagement and understanding at a deeper level that goes beyond, you know, the usual flags, festivals and food that schools often do for harmony or multicultural days, which are nice, but are often very superficial and very surface level. And what we'd like to see is the ability for, whether it's other areas of the curriculum. So I remember when I was doing English, we studied a dead German poet, you know, from the First World War. Well, why can't we study a translation of a Vietnamese poet or Indian poets? Why does it have to sort of be so Eurocentric in our outlook? So that's something that can open up discussions, dialogues, as well as whether or not there is a broader Asian studies push. But at the moment, with the new Australian curriculum, there is a concerted effort to bring in something which they're calling cultural awareness or intercultural capabilities, of which this program will be part of.
John Howard said that Australia was split between our history and our geography. And you can see that point, can't you? So much of our culture comes from Britain. So much of our popular culture comes from America and the UK. How will you impress on the, I suppose, the Anglo-Celtic Australian parents, the need to change focus?
I think we have to move away from that approach of this is medicine, it's good for you, you need to do it, you know, or think of your children's future, which is fundamental to it. But I think we have to make the approach about a kind of a whole of school or a community approach, as well as providing inputs, as well as some of the bigger, broader issues that are facing our country, which is that a sense of competitiveness about being effective, and the fact that, as I think you said in your intro, gone are the days of packing a briefcase if you're a business person and flying over and exporting something and needing languages, or as Ian remarked about that idea of being a cultural attaché and being able to converse in a number of languages. It's actually the reality is our school classrooms are multicultural. Our the future that we face will be multinational, multi-faith and multicultural, and whether that's if you're in Sydney, Perth, Brisbane or Melbourne, you know, you're going to be surrounded by different cultures.
Ian, if I could bring you back in here, if you do increase the demand for say, Asian studies, let alone Asian languages, because I think it's a harder problem, where are the teachers going to come from?
Well, there's a lot of work being done at the moment through the program that this is a part of.
Because there aren't enough now, though, are there? I mean, there just aren't enough.
Well, part of the work at the moment is developing, a lot of work being done developing resources through organisations like the Asia Education Foundation and Education Services Australia, so that more teachers can be better equipped and have better understandings around themselves around Asian cultures and be able to pass that on to their students through the curriculum, as Tom said, that part of the national curriculum is a priority for Asia.
Obviously the national curriculum still up for grabs, but I think you've been granted 60-odd million, 62 I think it is, over the next 4 years for this. Where exactly will the money go?
Well, as I said, the money's going in four different directions: supporting systems to improve the quality of the Asian studies and Asian languages in their schools and systems, going to teachers to support teachers to improve their understandings through things like cross-cultural studies, immersion studies and so on, particularly with languages. And then the balance of it is going into programs like ours to try and build student demand.
Mm. If parents are interested in being involved in this new project, how do they get in touch with you, and what's the commitment?
Well, hopefully it won't be a big commitment, and like most of the things that we find when people start to get involved in projects like this, it's a great source of personal development for them as well. We have a website for the project, which is pual.org.au, which has all of the information about the program, and there's also an online expression of interest form that they can fill in, or they can ring myself or Di Gidlin at the Council of State School Organisations, and our numbers are on that website.
We'll link to that website from ours as well. All right, thank you very much. I think that's a good place to wrap things up. Thanks both of you for joining me today.
Thank you, Richard.
Thanks, Richard.
So that's Ian Dalton, Executive Director of the Australian Parents Council, and Tom Parker, Consultant for Beazley Intercultural Consulting, and they are at the heart of this. I am very interested to hear from you on this. Do get in touch. I have to say, where my kids go to school, 37 different languages are spoken at home, and I cannot be down there picking the kids up without being conscious of that and being gripped by an optimism about the future of this country. So do get in touch. I'd like to hear from you.